I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. And we've just been joined by Little Queen Trash Mouth, host of the Hatch Attack Hours now on Fridays 10 to 12 on KMRD. Welcome. We are in our book club reading A Knock at Midnight. It's a collection of sermons, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And Little Queen Trash Mouth's in the book club with us, and so are you. And we are here to unpack what we've learned this week. So thanks for joining to talk about this.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Listeners, thank you for being here. So where do we start? I want to tell everyone that you can now listen to archives of the show on Mixcloud. That's Dream Queen 3 a.m. at Mixcloud.com. We are also now live on YouTube and other podcast platforms. That's In the Cab Radio, In the Cab with Dream Queen on YouTube, and In the Cab with Dream Queen. Just put that search in all of your podcast areas and see where I come up. So, do you have any points you want to start talking about before we go page by page?
Well, I found like the introduction to this sermon pretty interesting, where I forget the reverend who wrote the introduction was,
Dr. Otis Moss Jr.
And he points out a lot in his introduction the midnights that we are at this point, which was, I think, in the 90s, right, when this version was published.
Yes.
And it's just striking how similar they are to the midnights we are in right now.
Yes, every single situation that Dr. King lists in the sermon, we are going through right now.
Yeah, so you have it in the sermon from the 60s, in the introduction in the 90s, and now here we are yet another 30 years later.
Yes.
And I think a lot of this, it just still applies.
And that's why I'm doing this show like this, is because it's very relevant. History is our present, especially in a time when there are government organizations that are trying to take history out of the school so that we can be made ignorant of our past and where we're at right now.
And when governments are trying to ban social media platforms because of narrative control. Yeah. 100%.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the Senate bill? What is it?
Right now, the Senate bill 686 is not on any dockets. But what is now happening, it's a House bill. I forget the number. DJ Hot Diggity's probably yelling it at the radio right now. It's House Bill
call it in,
5
call it in.
Something or other. 517, 571. It's something like that. Sorry. But it has already passed the House, and it is specifically to ban TikTok. Senate Bill 686 has a lot of other scary stuff in it, like it's basically the Patriot Act for the internet. This House bill is more hyper-specific to banning TikTok as quickly as possible for several reasons. The main reason, I think, is to control the narrative of what's happening concerning genocide in Palestine right now. So,
yes, and other places.
Yeah, and other places. Yes, Sudan, Congo. Haiti.
Yes, and that's what's happening, is that the narrative is no longer controlled. People are picking up their phones and recording everything that's happening on the ground. And it's not just the people, it's activists in those communities that are talking about colonization and imperialism and their personal histories and present.
Yeah, and watching these effects in real time.
Right. So, speaking of people in other countries, especially other countries close to here, it brings up the relevance of the knock on the door, how we are treating our immigrants, people who come here seeking help, shelter, food, asylum.
Yeah. It's
very, and it's hard because people are coming here seeking asylum from their
From us. Yeah.
And it's very tragic to watch them be beat down at the border. So let's talk about the loaves.
Okay.
The Reverend Doctor talks about the hunger that people come to the door with. They come here seeking in this sermon, we heard the threefold midnight, and we heard about the three loaves, the loaves of faith, the loaves of hope, the loaves of love. And in the written sermon that appears in the book, this is a version that was recorded and delivered. I'm sorry. The book contains either transcripts of sermons that were recorded and delivered in different churches, or it is republishing the written sermons from other publications or books that Dr. King wrote. So A Knock at Midnight is just transferred here from King's book Strength to Love, which was published in 1963. The original version of this sermon was delivered in 1957 after the dark night of the Montgomery bus boycotts. And in the written version of the speech here, Dr. King addresses additional loaves, the loaves of freedom, the loaf of peace, the loaf of economic justice. And people come here searching for those things from America.
Yep.
Are you going to give it to them?
Well, I think we have postured ourselves as a society as symbols of those things. And I think that's like the rhetoric and propaganda we feed citizens here and abroad of what we are. Again, now that the narrative is not so controlled, I think a lot of people here and abroad are seeing that to not be true. I think on my show, I spend a lot of time talking about how those things are not true and provided for here, especially like by a quote unquote state, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think we are all hungry for those things. I think everybody's hungry for those things. And I think that, again, right now it's getting to a point where we're realizing that like there are some, in some areas, like cultural divides even that are crumbling without this like strict narrative control and like keeping people apart in their little boxes. People are realizing, oh, horizontally and like person to person, neighbor to neighbor, we're all really screwed under this system.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been the conversation that Dr. King has brought up since the beginning. And it's mentioned in this sermon that we need to understand in America, as he put it, our white brothers need to understand that we're too poor. Like, we're all mm-hmm. too poor. Like, why are we fighting each other? And since the beginning of slave times, when you have the term cracker, mm-hmm. it's the whip cracker. It's like mm-hmm. the vision of that we are tiered in our oppression. So the poor white is put as an overseer, not, you know, middle management or mm-hmm. lower management, out there in the hot, right along with us, getting angry, right along there with us, sitting out there, right there, just beating on us. And the real master is in the house or off somewhere else doing business under shelter.
And I mean, the real master is capitalism, is capital, right?
Capitalists.
And well, and even the actual capital being placed higher than any of the people enforcing it in this hierarchical structure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you have to see people as people. Again, I come back to the dehumanization of other human beings makes that possible.
Yep. Dehumanization and dominion of other any being, right? Makes that, comes into that. That's what I've been talking about on my show, is hierarchy.
Right. And as we talked about the other day, we were talking about, you wanted to say a few words on love your enemies. And that was the topic of last week. And I'd like to hear your thoughts. And it also crossed into a conversation that we were having on Thursday about religion and Christianity specifically. And I was going to say they're two separate things, but they aren't, because I've come to the realization since our conversation that that does underline the reason that I'm doing this so passionately is because I am a recovering Christian. I was brought up in the Baptist church, and there are a lot of comforting things in the philosophy for me. I have a lot of good memories of Christians and members of the church body that are loved relatives of mine, mm-hmm. that guided me as a child and lifted me up. And then there is the oppressive nature of the capital TC, mm-hmm. the church. And as we hear, Dr. King went against the capital TC. So I'd like to hear some of your thoughts on why you're here and how you're feeling talking about religion.
Yeah. I was also raised in the Baptist church, my Southern Baptist church. My mom and I moved to New Mexico when I was pretty young. I was 8. So I got out of regular church services at a pretty early age. And yeah, I think I too have some good memories of communal activities, communion. My grandparents, who were very, very active in the church, still here, started a church locally even because they couldn't find, because there was only a Catholic church locally. So I'm right there with you on that. And again, I disagree very much with the TC, the capital TC, the church. In a book that I've been reading called Beyond State Power and Violence, a big concept that was introduced was that what allowed for the statist oppressive society to arise was this shift from a spirits in everything. I am God, you are God, whatever word, right? It doesn't have to be God. Everything is part of that great creative spiritual nature that unites us all as one, right? Trees, us, everybody. The shift from that kind of belief system to a hierarchical creator God system, to where there is one God, he made everything, he, right? They're coming in there with already hierarchy. And then only one person can talk to him. Only certain people have the ability to talk to this. And then that starts this pecking order, right? The closer you are to this patriarchal creator God in body on this plane, the higher you are in the pecking order. And I think that any kind of organization like that, be it religion, statism, white supremacy, all of it is just ultimately damaging and not, and again, against human nature. We talked about this a lot in the bell hooks days of book club, to where what's the difference between a condition and a nature, right? And condition has to be so reinforced by things like myth, property ownership, all this stuff that starts to help reinforce these unnatural systems.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's interesting because it is, you know, I was talking with Icky Mack last week, since the beginning of this book, about myth and parable and animism and the archetypes. Mm-hmm. And it's so much in our history as humans to communicate and tell stories around the fire, in the cave. It passed the time before we had phones back in the dark ages. And so the difference between conditioning, where do we start? Like, what is our birth and I'm talking from the million years ago, what we've been doing for a little bit over a million years as a species with the shape of brain that we have. There's that part. And then there's within the past 2, 3, 5,000 years, even about conditioning. And it's very tricky for me because I don't want to go too deep into other creation theories, i.e. the ancient astronaut theories. It's very hard for me to dance away from that line. But there is a whole line of thought that that we've been kind of brought up and trained since the beginning of our inception as a species. So I don't necessarily turn away from the parable as a teaching tool.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it is, absolutely. And I think that's why it's so key. And once you control and change these myths, mm-hmm. that is a key element in, again, upholding these systems, right? Yes. Because, again, before, when the myth and the story was, we are all equal, we all commune with spirit, spirit is in all. How do you tell someone they're better than someone? How do you even tell someone they're more important than a tree, right? When we're all part of this mutual, Dr. King says it too, that we're all woven from the same tapestry. Like, mm-hmm. that's that same concept of, like, we are all in this equally, and viewing it and treating it the other way is, again, very unnatural.
Do you have any idea how it started?
Well, I mean, what I'm working through now is the earliest instances of, again, shifting from, again, a communal myth-based system, communal spirit-based system, to the dominion of Creator God, which is really happening, like, right around the Sumerian times in the book that I'm reading. Again, I'm reading one book and kind of supplementing it with outside research.
Man, we're going to get into the ancient astronauts. I already know it. You said Sumeria. that's where Zechariah Sitchin is talking. Sitchin?
So it's hard. Like, I haven't gotten to a point of, like, who was the first person that said there's only one God and I talked to. Like, that is not, that's hard to find. But as far as, like, you see a pretty wide shift kind of at the same time from a lot of different cultures into a hierarchical creator God system, and then the state follows very quickly right along with property ownership. So
the idea that that Sitchin puts forth is based on the Sumerian texts that you're referring to, and it's the idea that the Anunnaki came here as a race of extraterrestrials from a planet that is just outside of our solar system. It comes around very infrequently, 3,600 year long elliptical orbit, and that the beings from this planet created humanity in their own image, much like what's mentioned in Genesis, to mine the earth for precious metals, and
I mean, I can't, with the book that I'm reading and the material I'm using, I cannot refute this theory.
I mean, it seems like it's happening. I mean, you look at the people who are doing the mining in, mm-hmm. especially Central Africa, where I think right now what's going on in Congo is because they're the only place on the planet that has every single element that we need. Everything is right there in Congo. So a lot of corporations, especially the electronics makers, are being tremendous predators. And there are people now who just live on the land as tribal people. They just live there, and they didn't understand that they live on cobalt, mm-hmm. that their house is sitting on uranium deep down in the earth. And so right now there's a concerted effort to use militants from Rwanda, especially, to go in and basically massacre these people and force them off of their generational land so that it may be mined, so that we could have phones and computers and spaceships and electric cars.
Yep. The new floating restaurant that costs $500,000 to eat at.
No, there's a floating restaurant. Where is it floating?
In the stratosphere somewhere.
Wait.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping it's going to be the new Titanic sub of this year. That's my big hope.
Wait. Oh yeah. We're going to get back to Love Your Enemies. Wait. I have to wrap my mind around this, because you're dropping news on me, and I'm going to pull it up here right
next
to
Zegerson. I just saw it last night on Instagram, and it's like it looks like a hot air balloon floating in space, and they're going to charge people $500,000 to eat dinner there. And it's like not totally space. It's like I think it's like 100,000 feet up or something.
Okay. talk some more while I
and again, my biggest hope for this year is that it turns out to be, what was that blimp? Or the Titanic sub, whatever.
Yeah, the Titanic all sub, those, and then you had the Hindenburg.
Yes, that's what all those ridiculous vehicles that super wealthy people decide that they want to get on to flaunt their wealth, and then it goes terribly wrong because they also like to flout safety regulations in the name of a dollar. I think it's poetic justice.
Okay. Oh, okay. So I see here on one channel that there's a Space Perspectives plan for a floating space lounge. It's while you look at that, I'm going to go on a little bit about how ridiculous it is. However, again, this is why I play the classics. We have Gil Scott-Heron's classic, Rat Didn't Bit My Sister Nell, and Whitey's on the Moon. You know, all of the things that we are... Can I hold this? Mm-hmm. All of the things that we are going through as a people here on the planet, as the poors, the rich and elite are busy trying to get back to outer space. Mm-hmm. Back. I said back to outer space where they came from. I mean, if they think they're so special, I'm going to give you that to a drop.
Yeah, just go.
And that just brings back the theory of this ancient aliens. It's, they think that they are of a special bloodline that is directly descended from the gods. And if they are, they can go back, but they're not going to just go back because they want what they came here for.
Right.
Would you please tell the people about that? And yes. And also after the show, I'll take the information and put it up on the website. You're listening to In the Cab with Dream Queen. I'm here with my good friend, Little Queen Trashmouth, host of the Hashtag Hour, also on KMRD on Fridays from 10 to noon. And we are talking about A Knock at Midnight, sort of, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And we are exploring religion, spirituality, the responsibility of the human collective, and space lounges.
Okay, so what it is it's a Michelin level or Michelin star, which don't even get me started. I just found out that that actually means the tire company.
Yes.
Cannot handle it. It's breaking my reality. Like,
is that the name of the family that owns the tire company? Right. Okay.
But I don't know. It's just insane to me that we put that much weight in, like, clout.
Well,
I know why. It's because they did the travel guides. Like, that's how it started, right? Is like the tire company was producing travel guides to get people to drive more so they would need new tires. And that's why they started putting rating restaurants in the first place. Mm. But it's just so crazy to me now that it's like, you know, the like kind of bougiest hoity-toity people you know are like, I had a Michelin star. I'm like, it's the Michelin man. Have you seen that?
Do you know that?
Goofy, cartoony guy? Like, that's who's telling you where to eat? Come on.
Do you know that one of the first things that they invaded Congo for in the 1800s was rubber?
Well, there you go.
Yes,
see?
They're one of the oldest human trafficker families in our country. Rubber was one of the first things that they were taking out of Congo.
Well, more reasons for me to be even more mad that we still rely on this absurd rating system for restaurants.
And if you go real quick, is because they're already there. So if you think about why they're the front runner right now in these minerals and stuff, is because, or not front runner, but they're a part of it, is because they've had their hooks in that country since the 1800s, so they already are set up to do some digging there.
So the Space Perspective, as the company, I think is what it's called, proposes flights to an altitude of 25.736 miles on board, quote, Neptune is the name of this vessel. I think I've seen something about Neptune come up on that Wikipedia page you were reading from. A capsule attached to a space balloon traveling of a speed of about 12 miles per hour. Each trip lasts 6 hours, 2 hours for the ascent, hovering, then it hovers, then you can see the curvature of the Earth, so that's the height that it's going up to, and then descent. And then you eat a Michelin star meal for $500,000.
I'm against this.
Me too. I mean, It's happening. So there's. I'm totally against that. I hate that it exists. But since it does, can I name the people I want to go on?
Yeah. So I'm no longer against this.
Yeah. Like, let's get Amy Comey Barrett in there. Let's get Elon Musk in there for sure. Who's another one that matters? Oh, Josh Hawley. Let's get him.
So we're dangerously close.
We're supposed to be talking about loving some violations. Your enemies.
No. It's fine. Like we don't. Like you said the other day, we don't have to agree. However, we do have to agree on some guidelines about what will get the shows banned on various platforms. Because as I was doing some digging, there is a definite defamation situation. Mm. So as I put this up on different platforms. YouTube, everybody look for In the Cab with Dream Queen on YouTube. And we can't defame people. We can get sued for talking smack about, I would like this person to.
Is it that though? Or is it saying like, really even if I'm just like, I'm going to look into that.
You can't say, I mean,
this stuff fascinates
me
too.
I don't think it's appropriate to say that I wish this person would explode on a space station.
It's not what I said. I said I wish they'd go on a trip on the space station, which is likely to explode.
I love my friends. They toe the line. I used to think that meant like toe, like you're pulling it, but it's no you put your little toes right there at
it's
the
right
edge.
Over. Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, let's talk about loving your enemies.
I guess individual to individual, it's not a hard concept for me to wrap my head around. Like, I can understand that there are people that in my life that I do not like, I do not want to talk to, I do not want to interface with. I do not wish them ill beyond that. Like, I just don't want to see them. Mm-hmm. For me, the concept gets a little harder to resolve when it's talking about somebody that is on a level and in a position to inflict harm on billions, right? Which is what we are seeing with all the people I just named. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I spent some time in like kind of pseudo spiritual love, white light, blah circles and was kind of like singled out and targeted a lot for like being too angry. You're too in your head. You're too analytical. And it's been interesting to watch a lot of people that were in that headspace, maybe in 2014, 15, 16, since 2020 really come around and realize, oh no, like what we were doing was spiritual bypassing. This is an erasure of extreme human suffering. And like, we cannot get to this love and like light for everybody point until we deal with these shadows that have, I mean, that are man-made, right? And enforced by, again, all of our participation in this system.
Great, great points. And I really appreciate you bringing up spiritual bypassing. How's it feel inside of you? Like, I'm still trying to figure it out as well. Like, mm-hmm. and that's why I appreciate King, because he is not just saying love everybody right. The end. I mean, the sermon wouldn't have been 40 minutes long if that was the case. He's calling people out, and his kind of love your enemies I can get behind, because the way I'm looking at it right now is last week he was talking about, and Bell Hooks talks about this as well, because she's basically, I don't want to defame Bell Hooks, but I was afraid to read from her, and this woman has stole I don't know how many ideas from Dr. King, but he's great. He's got a bunch. Her book is basically, I mean, All About Love is basically a rewriting of many of Dr. King's theories, and there's no disrespect. Mm-hmm. It's like generationally, because it's what I'm doing here right now, what we're doing, is we have to translate and distill and revitalize these ideas because they have core truth. Mm-hmm. They are core truth. And I think that's one of the things that people are reaching out for in spirituality. These ancient ideas have persisted for this long because in our core, we know certain things to be true. If we have war, we will exterminate the entire species. We know that in our core. And therefore, when King is saying that this is not... He named the sheriff down in Alabama, and he's like, this is not his America. This is not his world. This is God's world. And that's where I come from a lot on it, too. They don't get to control the narrative. And I can be afraid of, like he was saying, backlash. One of the thoughts is, like, they can pull the plug on any one of us at any time for any reason. But it's worth it to keep the loaves of faith, hope, and love fresh.
I'm so glad. Keep it fresh. So glad you brought that up, because I was just saying, I think that for me, a lot of, like what you were saying of bell hooks borrowing from this, of us borrowing from this now, for me, like, you know, one of my favorite podcasts is a history podcast. And sometimes I get really frustrated with, oh my gosh, everything has always been this effed, right? But then also in a way, it, like, talking about faith and hope, because things have been messed up, worse in a lot of ways throughout human history, I do have faith that we all want something better, right? And then I have the hope that we will get there. Because, right, like, what were we talking about? You posed the question to me last night to think about the differences between hope and faith. And before I looked up any definitions, I just kind of sat with that myself. And my gut reaction was, faith is kind of evidence-based or trust-based. Like, there's more kind of tangible reason for faith than hope. Hope is a little bit more intangible and not necessarily based in evidence or patterns from the past, but more like aspirational.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what we got here on the Oxford Language Dictionary.
Yep.
Hope being defined, we love a definition on this show, in this book club. Hope being defined in the noun version, a feeling of expectation and desire mm-hmm. for a certain thing to happen. Faith being defined as, in its noun form, complete trust or confidence in something. Strong belief in God or the doctrines of a religion based on spiritual apprehension rather than proof. So what I'm getting, there's a subtle difference.
Yeah.
And yeah, I pose that question because the difference is so subtle. And so I get to say, I really hope that humanity gets itself together. I have complete faith in the transdimensional nature of the soul. And if we don't get it together and this whole thing goes up into flames, oh well.
Right.
We're going to wake up in another reality. And maybe that's the...
We're not.
After a very long nap. That's my spiritual
right.
faith. That
right.
that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It's
yes,
based on that.
That's, yes.
The scientific theory.
It's one of my favorite things to quote.
Yeah. So if there is no soil here on earth for me to be a particle of, or a tree, mm-hmm. there definitely is a universe of stars. But then
again, are all made of stars.
We are made of stars.
Yeah.
Stars. Sorry, look, Kim Mortal, shout out right there. But so coming back to King's definition of or one of his instructions, maybe ideas on how to love your neighbor, one of the things to bring it back to was the humanness of them. And when you mention the space diner, I think about these people as children. I think of Elon Musk and his apartheid South African family sitting around the table in his rooms. And like that poor child on that Richard Pryor movie, The Toy, like imagine like that is the disgustingness of these people's wealth. Like I imagine that he had human playthings. However,
I've listened to a lot of history podcasts about him right. and his family. And I mean, they moved from Canada to South Africa, like for apartheid.
Yes.
Like that is what they went there for.
Yes. A lot like what's happening with American people going to Israel and Palestine to settle there, especially now exploiting the destruction and displacement of millions of people. We have our own American citizens carrying their happy butts over there to be new settlers.
They're making I've seen disgusting videos of people in their neighborhoods going around and like recruiting to just move whole neighborhoods.
I challenge people who disagree with that to call out your friends and family. I'm sorry, this is...
Yeah, being compliant upholds the status quo. And right now the status quo is very damaging to most people and, again, other beings, like everything. So,
and silence is complicity.
Yep.
So you have to call people out. If you say that you care, but you know people who are participating in settling, you're a terrible human being. Yeah. I'm sorry. I have to say it because we're no longer in the annals of history. Mm-mm. We're no longer saying, what would you do if you were around at this time of slavery? Or why do you care? Slavery's over. No, it's not. It's happening right now for people, for our benefit, to people all around the world. You just don't see them in your face. And then the wage slavery people, you do see them in your face. They're your friends who can't seem to get a leg up. They're the people around you who are just able to get by while you're thinking about your retirement. Yeah. A lot of us won't even have that option.
No, not at all.
Sorry. And most of your children and your grandchildren, if you're a working class person, they're not going to have, if you have something, maybe there's generational wealth. There might be a chance.
Yeah, we have slave labor in our prison systems right now.
Oh yes, that's real. He talks about the building, in the introduction on the audiobook of A Knock at Midnight, Dr. Otis Moss comes in with the closing of factories and the buildings of prisons. Mm-hmm. He names it specifically. And right now that was 98 when he wrote the introduction here, and we are in full swing.
Oh yeah, right now. I mean, I talk a lot on my show about Cop City. That's not just happening in Atlanta. That's happening all over this country. We are training Israeli forces. They're training our cops. It's all like, this is all tied in. And again, when you see right now, Florida just made it illegal to sleep outside in public places, quote unquote. That is just a first of many efforts that we're looking at in this country to just completely police the poor out of existence, or again, into a slave position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you go to jail.
Yeah. And then you're going to work for 13 cents an hour or less.
This is what happened in Reconstruction America. A lot of people don't understand. This is where we got the 13th Amendment. So,
which is very clearly gives an exception for people in prison.
Yes,
that's very clear.
That's what it is.
Yes,
that's the whole. That's why it was written. Mm-hmm. And if you watch, have you seen the 13th? Anyone out there who hasn't, it's free on YouTube, and you can watch a documentary called, I believe it's just called The 13th.
I think it is too.
And I'm gonna get the information up here for you all right here, because I'd love you to educate yourself. Wow, I look at how many things you can really 13. I have to type this whole thing out. Some things will like autocomplete.
Right.
You know, I could see Britney Spears' 13th album or whatever, but I have to type all the way out.
Because I've been in here searching on this computer.
Hit me, baby, one more time. Oh, I don't know. Tell me what your favorite Britney Spears song is.
Oh, I have so many, Jada. I guess as far as singles go, it's Stronger, which I played yesterday. B-sides, What You See Is What You Get. Those are off the same album, though. Those are off Oops, I Did It Again.
I love it. yes, so you can watch the 13th, and in all fairness, the reason why maybe it took so long to come up is because it is just 13th, so the number 13th, and it is a film by Ava DuVernay, very prominent director, and she unpacks the journey from chattel slavery to abolition of slavery to the creation of the 13th Amendment. And basically I tie this in because, again, people aren't clear about history and how we're still using slave master tactics in today's society. And that's another reason why I'm telling y'all all to watch, what's my other one that I love?
1619
Project. Thank you. You're listening. Class, you get an A. This is a gold star for you today. What's Jada's favorite thing to make everybody watch? 1619 Project. Because Nicole Hannah-Jones, please hire me, Nicole Hannah-Jones. I want to work with you. Is that she takes a situation from today in all of those episodes and then just one topic and relates it directly from the conceptualization of this country and the first Africans that arrived here in 1619 and how we get to where we're at now, from healthcare to democracy. Well, from democracy, because she starts with democracy, to healthcare, to art and culture. And so folks being arrested for sleeping on the street and then being sent to jail, which are already overcrowded, and they're abolishing bail, which on the one hand is sounds great, you know, to take out cash bail, but because most people who are arrested can't afford it anyway, but they can't afford it. So what is the next thing? So you're sitting in jail and now you need something to do. So they're going to give you a job making mattresses, coffee cups, army fatigues, all kinds of things that are made in prisons. And so when Black people became free, they were still not allowed to gather and do certain things, and police would come through and break up and arrest people on anything, smoking, anything, and you wind up in prison on a chain gang. So, and that's for any amount of time. And putting people in jail for being homeless and then they go to forced labor camps is pretty much makes sense. Because my question would be, if you can't sleep on the street, where do you go?
Right.
You go to a labor camp.
Yes. That's I was talking yesterday about an essay I haven't read yet, but I want to read. And it's called like The Philosophy of Misery. But basically it's a criticism on the economy from the 1840s. By the man who coined the term property is theft. I was reading that essay of his yesterday on air. But he has another one where it's talking about like the economic evolution, and it starts with division of labor, machinery, competition, monopoly, and then goes into policing and taxation. And I'm like, that's the history of the American economy right there. Like, we're at the very end of this monopoly into the policing and taxation stage. Like, this is late stage capitalism. So I can't wait to read that whole thing. I have a feeling I'll be talking about it a lot.
Well, and again, you know, my big struggle here is being one of maybe four Black people within a 10-mile radius. And so I'm always banging the drum to remind people that they've been practicing this on people of color in this country since they brought us here. So when you say certain things to me, I just get so frustrated, because I'm like, we've been living under policing and taxation since we were. But that's just on me. It has nothing to do with you. These are my trigger buttons where, you know, I think I need a support group.
No, 100%. Yes, and
it's like warning white people. Warning. No,
but seriously, I mean,
tried
that's
to
like,
tell you, which I want to know what we were so angry about. Well, here you are.
And we're seeing that same thing now with what's happening in Palestine, Sudan, Congo, right? Like, all of that is coming for working class people here, if we let it, right? And again, this comes back to hierarchy. Where are you in this order of being closer to this white patriarchal creator God image, right? Like, you're going to feel it later, the closer you are to that ideal.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean it's not happening to everyone else in the system. And yeah, this guy, he's a French anarchist. So he has some viewpoints that don't completely mesh, because it was a very different country. They went through their revolt. They brought their guillotines out. So it's hard to, in that way, to kind of transpose it here, but it is fascinating. And I do love, you know me, I love my historical sources, and I'm like, oh, was this written yesterday? Because it sounds like it was. So
I want to finish my thought about Elon Musk, you know, and his, you know, human playthings in South Africa. And I want to humanize him to myself, right? So I imagine this person. And he's sitting there and he's like looking at all of the same shows that we're looking at. Do you know how old he is?
He's in his 40s, I think.
Okay, so probably same shows that I'm looking at. And wow, how cool would it be to go to outer space and just hang out? And then you grow up and you're the guy who makes the thing to take people to outer space and hang out. So
he's 52.
He's 52. Okay. So he's watching Star Trek, and he's like, how cool would that be? And then everybody
then he missed here, the point of Star Trek.
Right. Well, that's the thing. So, you know, I was about to say Christ. So Martin Luther King. Christ reincarnated. Martin Luther the King is, you know, he's, I just lost my thought because I put that together. So he made the thing to send his friends out to space. And I'm challenging all of the people that I know. Y'all make me sick. When I go on Facebook and there's a new Mars rover or there's a new space thing, and my friends who have privilege are like, this is so great, I can't believe this is so cool, and I'm like,
it's not.
Can you put that next to that mm-hmm. picture next to anything that's happening outside of your house? Okay, maybe a mile down the street if you live in a suburb, maybe at the border of your state, and feel as excited about stopping brutality as you are about another Mars rover, then you can check your privilege. And again, I feel frustration. I feel sadness. I feel angry. I feel the disillusionment and discouragement that Sweet Honey and the King are saying. And I think, how can I go on? I think my works are in vain. I am getting up at 6:30 after 4 hours of sleep to do this radio show, staying up all week to make a channel to get, and I get 7 clicks, and I can't even get my friends that I send it to like and subscribe. And it's just like, what the heck is the point? I'm going to bed. You know, there is no balm in Gilead. There is no point. It's just tragedy all day long. So with the 7 minutes left in this hour, do you have a cure for this, please? Like morphine, acid, there's got to be a cure for pain.
Well, it is, that's a hard one, because I think especially right now, it being another election year, I have a lot of people who I feel like throughout my life have maybe been not as like tuned into the actual kind of like very real tragedy and like how far from any sort of ideal status quo we've come as a nation are coming out of the woodworks and reaching out to me on Instagram. What do we do? What do we do? And I'm like, well, I'm doing it. You know, you gotta get up and go to the food bank. You gotta get up and do your work. Like, I think, I mean, it's not a glamorous answer, but the answer is hope. Gotta have that.
Which
hope.
One is that again? That's the
the desire, the aspirations,
the feeling of expectation. Yeah, right. So have hope, and then do as the love as a verb.
Yes.
So loving our enemies. How can I as an action? And I know that you're not really into that across the board. So I'm gonna skip the love your enemies answer. But I hear what you're saying on getting up and doing the work and. That's the other adage, is be the change that you want to see in the world. And so mm-hmm. that's what we're bringing back here, is the themes of In a Knock at Midnight, the responsibility and the role. And so circling all the way back around for me as I touch on these, it's Dr. King. So I wanted to bring him back to life for another generation of people. We have to keep his words mm-hmm. and teachings alive, even if for no other reason than there's a big reason why they martyred him.
Oh yeah.
And I think the actual sermon, the delivery, the words that he used in the Knock at Midnight sermon, I can see why mm-hmm. he was assassinated. He had masses of people who were hanging on his every word, calling out capitalism and imperialism and poverty and the heartlessness, the coldness of the people who would rather go to space than redistribute wealth and pay their employees a livable wage. This is not just, hey, he had a successful career. No, you were born into massive wealth. You moved to a place where you can actually get your kicks in being a white supremacist and profit more off of other people's labor, mm-hmm. not just a decent profit, but actually enslaving people to get the pieces for your rocket ship, digging giant craters into the earth that could never heal.
Yep.
And you're bugging off to outer space mm-hmm. for kicks. And the Elon Musk that I have to hold on to is the little child who was put in his room and sat in front of a TV and told that, given the sickness of white supremacy, he was mm-hmm. given it.
There's a lot of speculation, again, in podcasts that I've listened to that suspect he is probably on an autistic spectrum somewhere, too.
And there's like, a lot of, sorry.
I know.
I'm like, there's a lot of autistic people ain't going around.
I know. And when you couple that with then problematic upbringing, right, like.
Sound like you're trying to humanize him. How you going to eat him if you're going to humanize him?
I want to eat that one. I don't want to eat that one.
You don't want to eat
that one. No, he looks gross.
Oh, wow. Do you want to stay for a few more minutes? Yeah, you got to take off. All right. I'm Dream Queen. You are in the Ear Candy Hour, and DJ Barnacle had to not be here today and asked me to step in. And so here we are extending our hour a little bit, our book club discussion, A Knock at Midnight, Inspiration from the Great Sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And I think I'm going to try to read a little bit from it in a minute. Y'all, I'm just reeling a little bit because even though I'm from D.C. and my mom is still there, hey, Mom, you're probably listening. I didn't know about the crime bill. And if you can hear me out there, my people in D.C., shoot me a little text and just let me know, thumbs up, thumbs down, what's going on. So, hey, little Queen Trash Mouth.
Hello.
I want to talk to people about what you just hit me to, okay?
Okay.
All right.
I'm sorry.
I know. Well, thanks for telling me. All right, y'all. So what I'm understanding, and I ask you to do your own research, because this is coming in on the fly for me, even though it's not new as we're Googling during the break. The major news sources are glossing over the details of this bill, as they like to do with details. Hey, Hot Diggity, she likes to get y'all. She'll be on at 6 tonight.
Is it 6 or? No, 5 to 7.
5
two
to
hours
7. She had 2 hours tonight. So
always now.
Oh, hey, mm-hmm. Hot Diggity, welcome to Heck is on for 2 hours now, 5 to 7. That's great. Congratulations. And I'm shouting her out because she spends a lot of time, a lot of her personal time reading bills and trying to hip us all to what's going on in the government and the legislature locally and nationally. So, and internationally as well. Thank you, Hot Diggity. Hey, thank you, Hot Diggity. So what we're looking at right now, and if you, I love you too, if you have some, if you can send us some notes, because I can see you're listening now. So what you can work. I'm gonna get her in here, y'all. I'm gonna get her in here. I'm calling you out.
I got the full bill. You can find the full bill online pretty easy.
Okay, tell us where to find the full bill.
It's known as the Secure DC Omnibus Amendment Act of 2024.
Omnibus.
And I found it through a link from a DCist.com article talking about your questions about the massive DC crime bill answered is the DCist article, and they link the full bill in that article.
Okay.
But again, if you Google the DC, what did I say it was? Secure DC Omnibus Amendment Act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So again, that's my hometown. I have loved ones there. I am not against securing the DC area. However, this is very scary because security for a certain class looks like mass incarceration for another class.
Yeah, and violence.
And violence, yeah. And death, mm-hmm. And oppression. What I've got here, face coverings criminalized.
Yep.
Any items worn that cover most of the face are now criminalized with detention or arrest as the penalty. This includes, but is not limited to, hoodies against black people and youth, bandanas against people who have issues with their hair, and hijabs, obviously against Muslims. The police will be the sole deciders of which face coverings are allowable. Now, this is already going on in France. It's already going on in many places where people are being criminalized for wearing a hijab. I can't. Anyway, fear is now cause for arrest. Anyone wearing any item that covers most of the face who causes another person to feel afraid can now be arrested regardless of the person's actions. So me just standing there, okay, all right, I challenge. If I'm feeling afraid of a random right. white person,
right.
do they get arrested?
Well,
because these are the things that mm-hmm. I am completely programmed to be like, this is a law against me. I don't see a lot of other people. I don't see all those people being arrested who wore Klan masks and
all
of these things. Okay.
I mean, not all. Sorry. I gotta watch my mouth. They're not all, but there's a big old overlap.
It's based in that. So gatherings of two people or more is criminalized. The police
can be.
The police can now designate any neighborhood as high risk, mm-hmm. allowing them to arrest innocent people for gathering in groups of two or more. If police suspect that they might.
What is a group of two? Is that like me and a partner, me and a child? Like what? Again, it's all so vague and terrifying. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's vague on purpose, but mm-hmm. it's just.
Yeah, these are
freest country on earth.
These are laws from Reconstruction times. So, and this is one of the things that I'm learning is that there was actually a civil rights bill passed in the 1860s. And it was overturned by the Supreme Court as being unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So post-slavery, right during Reconstruction, y'all heard me right. There was a civil rights bill enacted for black people. It was fought and overturned by the ruling class and taken away. And then it was another 100 years later that another civil rights bill passed after much bloodshed, bombing, murder, lynchings, arrests of black people and activists. Finally, the civil rights bill was passed. Now they are chipping away at those same civil rights. So this is not new. This is all over America's history that this is happening. So it's not new. Wake up, people. Active duty status of officers is now secret. The public will no longer be able to know if an officer who was found to have engaged in misconduct is still on active duty or not. And people fought really hard to pass bills that are stating that you have to identify yourself as a police officer. You can't just walk up to somebody, start harassing them, and do whatever, and then the person is defending themselves, and then you're like, oh, I'm a cop. Now you're arrested for police brutality, and me and my buddies are going to murder you right here on the street. Which happens, people. Say their names. Body camera restrictions removed. The plan will overturn current policy that prohibits the police from viewing their own body camera footage before they write statements. This has nothing to do with lowering the crime rate. So let me understand this again on this little rundown. The plan will overturn current policy. Oh, that prohibits the police from viewing their right. own body camera before they write statements. So I can look at my body camera footage and write my report based on that rather than what at what happened. So talk. You look like you haven't.
So concert. To me, it's more like you can't watch the footage and then craft a matching narrative, right?
Uh-huh.
Like what we've seen so many times over and over in police brutality and videos that have come out of, oh, he was coming at me, I felt threatened. Well, no, he wasn't. He was running away.
Right.
And there's the video that proves it. So right now, they can say the story without seeing the footage, right? Mm-hmm. But what this is saying is they'll be able to watch the video and then take notes to then justify what's happening right. in the video.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
So he's running away and I shot him because y'all didn't see that he spit at me before.
Right. 100%. Or he was yelling, what, like, if there's no audio, what it was you saying when he was running away. He said he was going to go run to get a gun or whatever. Like that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Discarding a gun will become a crime. If you illegally possess a gun, which is already a crime, the movement that you drop the gun or put the bullets down, you've committed two more additional crimes. So if you keep holding the gun, you'll get shot by police. Mm-hmm. And if you drop the gun, you're now getting a longer mm-hmm. sentence. Mm-hmm. Oh, Jesus. Killing car chase suspects now legal.
Yep.
Police can now kill suspects during car chases, a practice that is currently banned. The police will become the sole decision maker about life and death, regardless of guilt or innocence. Listen, y'all, I sit at home and I watch the Israeli army, you know, have these same laws against Palestinian people. And I think that's not right. And the police don't get to walk around and decide you're judged. Or, and so I guess you need to pull out your Black Lives Matter stuff again.
Yep.
Okay. Don't play. DC is so expensive to live now. I am really, like, I have no hope of ever moving back there. And I'm amazed that my mom can still live there. She, you know, I'm not going to go into all of that. But I will say that in areas where gentrification is happening really big, mm-hmm. I don't know, I'm losing words. Cause I'm agape.
Yeah.
You know, not agape. I'm agape. And I'm at a loss. Like, it's right here on paper that cops can just legally kill you. Even a slow chase, even if nobody's being hurt, yep. even if anything. And if you pull over and get out, they'll shoot you. So you might as well just keep driving into the Potomac River. Okay. Show your papers. Metro law. Here we are. Show your papers.
Yep.
The police will now be able to immediately arrest anyone suspected of misconduct while riding the Metro. That's DC's public transit system, for those of you who don't know. So if you're on the bus.
Right. And who's on the bus?
Who's on the bus? Mm-hmm. Well, I know a lot of rich people they used to ride the bus before Uber. They probably just take. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Can I say Uber? Anyway, the police will now be able to immediately arrest anyone suspected of misconduct while riding the Metro who refuses to share their name and home address. For instance, if a plainclothes officer demanded your address on the Metro, not telling them could now lead to arrest. So I'm going to say something.
Right. And they don't have to tell you that they're a cop either. No. So it's just some rando dude. Yeah,
let's all just play.
Some rando dude yeah. wants your address uh-huh. and you don't want to give it to them because, duh, don't give rando dudes your address.
Right.
Now you're in jail.
Yeah.
About to be a culinary team on yeah. Space Balloon.
Yeah. So as we, yeah. So as we were doing our fact checking, y'all, I came upon an article in the DCist, and it might be near the one that you were talking about, that the bill incorporates provisions from a previously introduced bill that people were complaining about the food at the DC jail, which some were saying is inedible. Mm-hmm. This bill would create a new hospitality and culinary arts training program for DC jail residents and mandate that the Department of Corrections adhere to to higher nutrition standards for meals. And the first thing I thought was, yeah, you know, you can get in the culinary and hospitality arts
training in the prison program
in the jail. So when you get out, or maybe part of your probation program, they fly you to space and you could cook at the floating restaurant.
Yep.
But you'll probably just wind up taking out garbage bags and putting them in the escape hatch because
in the space they're gonna trash
have,
dump.
They're going to have so many chefs. You'll be cooking for the other servants in space.
Yes.
Ooh, let's make a show. You want to make a film festival movie?
Yeah, yeah.
Servants in Space.
Yeah.
That's it. All right, y'all. Look for the next filming that's going to happen in Madryn. I don't know who I had to talk to, the MCP or the MLA for a permit.
Depends on where it is.
Yeah, I want to do it like The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And we'll go up by the KMRD antenna. And we'll do some footage of Mars. We'll pretend like we're...
Yeah.
I can't. Like, I'm supposed to...
When you get fired in space, do they just...
They just put you out the hatch.
Can you imagine? How do you walk off that? Like, I have...
You don't.
Like, oh my God. This is why I've always said I could never be a stewardess, right? Because I'm like, I've waited tables, worked in restaurants. I'm like, you can always leave. You can just leave. You can walk away. You cannot walk off a plane. You're not leaving the space balloon. Jeez.
No, you're not leaving the space balloon. And that was the other question. Was is the world's most expensive meal, if it's served in space, is it the world's most expensive meal? Or
the universe's most expensive meal? The
galaxy's most expensive meal so far.
Sharing the joys of capitalism with every place we can.
Yeah, they try and get back home. Listen, I'm fully embracing the ancient astronaut theory now, and I'm just like, they're just trying to get back to their natural habitat. I can't be mad at my enemies because they're just trying to find their way home, Corey. Like,
well,
E.T.
Let's help them.
E.T.
Let's shoot them up into space right now. I will help you get there. Any billionaire that wants to get a fast ticket back to space, where's that cannon they used in Theater of Death a couple years ago?
Oh, just keep ordering from Amazon. You'll get them all there here soon enough.
No, I'm just going to shoot them up in space.
So let's talk about this. So there are these type of things that are happening not only in D.C. And I'm wondering if somebody had stopped me and was talking to me about these different laws in Washington. And I don't know why. I thought they were talking about the Pacific Northwest with all of the anarchist people that are under oppression. So do you know of any other laws like this that are being enacted in other states? Because go ahead. I'm going to put
big,
a period.
Big important mark. Thing to know is about the 100-mile zone, right? So if you're 100 miles from any border of the U.S., including water borders, you do not have constitutional rights right now. Customs and Border Control can completely supersede your constitutional rights if you are 100 miles from an international border.
No.
Yes, 100%. Look this up. 2/3 of Americans live in these zones and do not have constitutional rights on a day-to-day basis. No. This is true. Yes, this is true. This is all real. And so that includes the entire state of Florida because of the water, the entire state of Maine because of Canada and the water. Like, it's a scary... We are not in one. Santa Fe's not. Madrid's not. We're 100 miles from international borders. But Las Cruces is in one. That's a huge chunk of our state's population.
Okay.
So, yes, I know of a lot of instances there. This is happening. This is how... Like, what's going on in New York, where they deployed 2,000 National Guard troops into the subway system to conduct, quote, random search and seizures. But it's not random.
Right.
They're targeting people wearing face masks and hijabs.
Right.
So, yeah, this is happening in a lot of places. Texas also just passed an insane...
Oh, Texas and their stuff.
Show me your papers law. Let me look it up. I have that one pretty on deck because I was messaging with a friend about it the other day. Let's
so,
see.
While you do that...
Yeah, any Texas police officer can now arrest anyone off the street whom they, quote, suspect is undocumented.
Right.
And it's on your onus if you're that person to have all of your documentation on you. Otherwise, you just go to jail.
Keep your ID on you, folks.
Yep.
Keep your ID on you. I hate to have to say that. okay, well, I guess we're here. I kept thinking, you know, it's really important to do this because in November, when we get, you know, the fascist regime reelected, but it's really a one-party situation that we're in, and we are already in some trouble. Okay, yes. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. But okay, so on that note.
We're just going to have 30 more minutes of silence on KMRD.
Intentional silence, not dead air.
No, I just need everybody to breathe. I gotta go lay down.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let me try to give a hope nugget of something that stuck out to me in the text of A Knock at Midnight was when Dr. King was talking about being in his personal midnight of the bus strikes working so efficiently that they were going to ban the carpooling, yes. Right? So number one, I like that there was a mutual aid component of how do we get outside of the state, right? Which is that is going to be increasingly important in our lives.
Yeah.
So what I'm talking about is towards the end of the written version of A Knock at Midnight.
Yes.
I think it's Alabama state legislature mm-hmm. is about to make this carpooling system that black citizens had set up to not
white,
have. And white. Yes. Yeah, yeah. To protest.
Because we don't want to leave the white people out of the civil rights movement. It's important to the love your enemies and the perceived enemy stuff.
Because the buses were segregated,
right?
There were strikes against the bus system. So people set up a carpooling network so that they could still have shared rides, get to and from work, not be so cost prohibitive, but not have to use the segregated bus system. The Alabama governor, I believe, was about to make the carpooling element illegal
mm-hmm.
when the Supreme Court actually ended up saying bus segregation is illegal. So Dr. King uses that as the example of midnight is really just the moment before dawn, right? Mm-hmm. So his darkest midnight was coming with the end to the mutual aid network that had been set up, but really it was actually the moment before the dawn of a desegregated bus system.
Yes, it was the mayor.
Oh, the mayor.
Mayor Gale of Montgomery decided to sue Dr. King and the organizers of the bus boycott and say that that the city argued that they were operating a, quote, private enterprise without a franchise, basically a business without a permit.
Yeah.
And their lawyers, Dr. King's lawyers and the coalition's lawyers argued that the carpool was voluntary, share a ride plan provided without profit as a service by Negro churches. And it became obvious to him that Judge Carter would rule in favor of the city. And I'm going to read directly from the book here, page 77. At noon, during a brief recess, I noticed an unusual commotion in the courtroom. Mayor Gale was called to the back room. Several reporters moved excitedly in and out of the room. Momentarily, a reporter came to the table where, as chief defendant, I sat with the lawyers. "Here is the decision that you've been waiting for," he said. "Read this release." In anxiety and hope, I read these words. "The United States Supreme Court today unanimously ruled bus segregation unconstitutional in Montgomery, Alabama." My heart throbbed with an inexpressible joy. The darkest hour of our struggle had become the first hour of victory. Someone shouted from the back of the courtroom, "God Almighty has spoken from Washington." The dawn will come. Disappointment, sorrow, and despair are born at midnight, but morning follows. "Weeping may endure for a night," says the psalmist, "but joy cometh in the morning." This faith adjourns the assemblies of hopelessness and brings new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. all right, I guess I can be here for 25 more minutes, right? Right? I mean, that's why this is so important. It's like I get so overwhelmed and I got to remember to just pick this up. Thank you for reminding of that. Because I remember being moved so much by Dr. King's admission in this in this book. So it's really vastly different from the audio version of the sermon that we heard in the first hour that's on the records. This written sermon, he really admits to the sick feelings of anxiety in his gut. Like, he's like, how can I get up in front of the congregation and give these people hope on the last days of the bus boycotts that they have spent, he was saying, 11 months going through everything that they went through, nonviolent resistance. And he calls out in the last sermon how in the Love Your Enemies, how people, he's like, I can't hold them back for much longer. He's like, I got people who are with me on nonviolence. They are trying really hard. But if you keep pushing them, I can't hold them back from violence. He knew that. He knew that. And so as he's standing there, like I said last week, there's church bombings, there's home bombings, there's shootings at vehicles, there's threats, there's lynchings by the Klan and the White Citizens Council. These people are standing there, not shooting back, not fighting back. This is where Malcolm X and the Black Panthers, you know, even though they came along a little bit later, but these black activists are looking at King and they're like, you're a fool, man. You're a real fool. Like, they out here trying to, they out here literally killing us all, and you want me to stand here? Right? So he's like, how am I going to get in front of the congregation and tell them after all of this that we're going to get sued, the ride shares are going to stop, and they got to go back to walking. On top of everything else now, you got to walk. And I just really appreciate how dark it got for him. And he even wrote a line on the same page. I'm just going to read this whole paragraph. At our regular weekly mass meeting, scheduled the night before the hearing, I had the responsibility of warning the people that the carpool would probably be enjoined. That means stopped. I knew that they had willingly suffered. They chose to roll with him. I knew that they had willingly suffered for nearly 12 months, but could we now ask them to walk back and forth to their jobs? And if not, would we be forced to admit that the protest had failed? For them, for the first time, I almost shrank from appearing before them. When the evening came, I mustered sufficient courage to tell them the truth. I tried, however, to conclude on a note of hope. We have moved all of these months, I said, in the daring faith that God is with us in our struggle. The many experiences of days gone by have vindicated that faith in a marvelous way. Tonight, we must believe that a way will be made out of no way. Yet I could feel the cold breeze of pessimism pass over the audience. The night was darker than a thousand midnights. The light of hope was about to fade and the lamp of faith to flicker. Man, I want to cry right now. What y'all gonna do? Anybody got fresh bread?
Yeah, bring us a loaf of hope, please. I know some people don't listen to lyrics as intently as I do, so I just want to quote the Wildfire song that we just played. The I will always rise in wildfires. I ain't never been scared, even through my tears. I will always care in wildfires. And I just feel like that is a kind of good summary of where we came to with our discussion today. We are at midnight in a wildfire, a fascist wildfire. But we still got to care. you still have to act from a love ethic, not a fear ethic. And, you know, hug your friends. Your friends need hugs.
Word.
Or not, and they're not necessarily, it could be a different hug. Some people don't like to be touched, but, like, you know, support your friends is what I'm saying, is we need support, we need help. This work cannot be done alone.
It's true. It's true. And I thank you. I feel like I'm either yelling into a vacuum or a void when I do this show sometimes. I'm preaching to the choir or nothingness. And that's okay, because each one teach one. Everybody doesn't hear the message from the same source, right? So those of you who can hear me, maybe you know some other people that you can work with to change their heart and mind into inclusiveness and equity, and just pass the seed of this information on like wildflowers and like a wildfire. The embers on the winds of change will burn this system to the ground as it exists and rebuild it. We have infrastructure, folks. We have infrastructure. Why don't you tell them, little Queen Trash Mouth? Like, we talk sometimes about how people think that in order to see big change in the world toward equity, that there has to be a massive amount of suffering. By telling people they should consume less, they feel like they can't lose anything else. There's a fear of lack.
Yeah, that's the scarcity narrative that is, again, I believe, enforced on us by a capital hierarchy, right? It's the people that are even telling you use paper straws, all this, they're the ones that are hoarding everything and making it unlivable, right? So it's, again, it's just a false narrative to keep everyone too scared to act, too busy to act, too distracted to act, right? There's a lot of ways we keep people from having the capacity to work towards change. And it's, again, it comes through distraction, it comes through fear, it comes through, I'm just comfortable enough that I don't feel like I have to do anything, right? Like, it just happens in so many different ways.
If you feel like you're comfortable enough that you don't have to do anything, then you're not thinking about other people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just number one. You think, like, are you put here just to live for you and your family?
Some people feel that way.
Some people really do feel that way. And that's fine. I will declare you my enemy.
Yeah.
I will declare you my enemy, but I will not work to your demise. But I will work for the equity to bring other people up out of your oppression. And I will be there for you when you see the error of your ways and want to step up and participate in the world with other beings that don't share your privilege. And that's I think, to me, is part of the loving your enemies thing, right? I'm working this out as we're talking a little bit. In the face of course, I can sit home and think about this stuff all the time. I can sit with my friends and, you know, we can talk about this and pontificate. But sitting here after reading those rules that have come into law and reeling from this news, it's a reintegration. Every new bit of information we get, we have to be kind to ourselves and realize that we have to integrate it into our psyche and sit with it for as long as it takes. If it takes 3 minutes and 24 seconds of a song, but I swear to God, I'm going to have to do a lot more after we get off the air here. Wes is coming in here in a second. I got a lot more integration to do. But at the end of the day, it comes back down to take your time, take it in, breathe out, and see what you can do to participate to help make the world a better place. Everybody doesn't have the same role to play, okay? You don't have to start a podcast, but we would appreciate it if you would like and subscribe to this one, because at least then it's showing the numbers that, like, okay, I'm telling Nicki Mac all the time, you don't have to get caught up in numbers, bro. You know, this is just the ego game. But at the same time, when you see those numbers, it gives an amount of worth to the information. So even if you click like and subscribe to a channel that is saying something that is about ideas that are in their counterculture ideas, just click like.
Yeah.
Like, I'll click like on a video before I even watch the whole thing if I know it's coming from a place of love from somebody that I know that's doing this work out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry to the folks that are on Instagram doing a lot of that work, because I'm not on there a lot. But I'll push a heart every time I see it, for sure.
Yeah.
Because I appreciate the work that you're doing. And the fear that you're talking about, that came over me. You know, I'm like, okay, well, I can't go anywhere. Like, I can't leave Madrid. All I want to do is go on a trip right now. Mm-hmm. But all I feel like is that I can't, like, move now. I can't move around. And I know that I can't obey that law. Civil disobedience. We cannot let them control us in that way. And I will bring this back to my last thought, and then we're going to close. I'm gonna let little Queen Trash Mouth say a little bit more, and then we're going to close and give it over to Wes in the Lobster Garden. But in two sermons ago, and you can see episode 2 of this, and a nice little short that Icky Mag and I created on It's really good, and I'm going to do one of this. I can't wait to lose another whole week's sleep working on some snippets from this. It's going to be so much fun. In the cab with Dream Queen on YouTube, you can see a nice short video. You can also find the podcast, the audio of 2 weeks ago show. It's episode 2, and it's Paul's letter to American Christians. And in it, Dr. King is pretending like he's Paul the Apostle. Both Dr. King and the apostles, namely Paul, since we're talking about him, found themselves in jail practicing civil disobedience and the proselytization of a love ethic. They found themselves in prison. And what Dr. King said was that if you have to go to jail, then you have the dignity to grace jail with your presence. Okay? So if we find ourselves in prison next to each other, we're just going to have to do our best while we're in there. Because there's a lot of people who are there. There are a lot of people who are in that. There are a lot of activists that wind up there. And you know, get ready.
Yeah. Yeah. Buckle up. Buckle up. Solidify those horizontal support networks.
Yeah. And so those of you who are lawyers, I want you to hurry up and figure out how you can work in doing pro bono work for people. Okay. That can be part of your role. Those of you who have a lot of funds, you know, so this is what it is. We're knocking on your door, okay? We are those people. It is midnight. And I'm having a hard time seeing the dawn, but I do have faith that it will come, because it comes every day. Yep. That's how, when we lived in spiritualities, that we practice spirituality that goes in the rhythms of the earth. It's impossible to be hopeless when you see what a cycle is. Mm-hmm. Dark, 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 light, dark.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for being here. Everybody tune in to the Hashtag Hour with Hours with Little Queen Trash Mouth, 10 to noon on KMRD LP, Madrid, New Mexico. Love you so much. Even if I called you out this hour, love you so much. Thanks for those who are calling in and listening.